The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
A foundation has just been launched in the memory of and to continue some of the work of the late Eddie Jordan. One of the trustees of that foundation is Zoe Jordan, Eddie's eldest daughter. And Zoe is with us to talk about her late father and about the legacy to be honoured by that foundation. Zoe, good morning.
Good morning, Anton. Thank you so much for having us.
It is a great pleasure. Can I get a sense of your life with your dad in terms of where it all happened? Because the period where you were growing up, he was nomadic. He was all over the world. So where's home for you?
I always remind people we're really gypsies at heart. I was born in Ireland in the old Coombe, I think quickly moved over to the UK, and then, you know, around kind of Silverstone area. And really, I think we were in a caravan for most of my kind of younger years. But yeah, you know, when we were growing up, we'd have racing drivers stay with us. I remember Johnny Herbert used to kind of do my hair in the morning. So it was a very kind of, you know, freewheeling younger years. And then I guess, you know, as dad's career kind of tracked and he got more and more serious and more competitive, that's when things started to slow down a bit and we settled in Silverstone, Oxford area. But yeah, I mean, it was fast paced. Dad's always lived with, you know, there's a book coming out, it's called Full Throttle. I mean, he lived at a serious pace. So it was hard, it was tough work trying to keep up with him at times. But, you know, he mixed family life and work life and fun and everything together. So it was never a dull moment.
Did you get to see much of him during that period? Because I assume he was both absolutely captivated with work, given how challenging Jordan Grand Prix was in the early years, and out of the country all the time.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a bit of that. I think we were totally taken aback in and honoured by how many tributes came in for Dad. And I think that just kind of proved the point to us a little bit that while we were so lucky to have such an incredible figure and energy in our lives, we did have to share him with you know, a very all-encompassing, highly competitive sport and what that took. And it was, you know, when I was growing up, it was, I think they would start in Australia and then go to Japan. So that was at least a month where he would be gone. You know, how many Grand Prix, I couldn't really keep up. But yeah, he was definitely in and out. But, you know, it made the time that he was home very precious. I'm the eldest. So, you know, I really kind of probably got the kind of firsthand the change in our life from, you know, playing with the ants and the mechanics and the paddock to, you know, the kind of glitzy world of F1. But yeah, he did, you know, I remember going to the factory with him. I would just sit in his office and just listen in to what he was up to, his kind of wild ideas and his hustle. And, you know, that I wrote in the book actually that he would just, you know, give me a little wink here and there just to let me know kind of I was in on it. And he had that ability to make you feel very special, even though maybe he wasn't around all the time. But, you know, that's what, you know, that level of success entails as well, doesn't it? It does entail sacrifice. It's a double-edged sword in that way.
You mentioned the thing of playing with the ants and the mechanics in the paddock. Does that mean that you remember him when he was driving?
I don't quite go back that far, but that's what my mum recalls. Like that's kind of how I grew up, on messing around with ants in like motorhomes. And, you know, I think it was those were the good days. That's what they remember.
So what was he like then at home? Because he always struck me as somebody who was absent and off switch.
There was none. You know, like he would come home for the weekends. We might take, you know, out the punts or go on the barge. There was always action. There was always movement, whether it was on boats or cars, or he would take, you know, steal one of the motorhomes for the weekend and we'd go to Stan Lake where we'd be like water skiing. So there was always lots of sport, lots of movement. There was no sitting still. There was always a bit of an adventure, and there was some music maybe, or sports, or yeah, just a general non-sitting still. So yeah, he did fly fast. He did move quick, but you know, at the same time, there was never a dull moment. We never, you know, and in that way, he inspires action over kind of, he doesn't overthink things. And I think that came through in a business sense as well. He just went out there and did it, and he didn't really let anything hold him back.
And did you have any sense of the pressure he would have been under? Because in the early years of Jordan, it was, I mean, running on the clippings of tin, there was very little in the way of money. It was trying to do something that had never been done by an independent privateer to that scale. Did you see the stress in him, or was there any?
For sure there was stress. I think you could probably, you know, see that in how well he looked. I feel like he looked so well after he finished with Formula One in terms of like his physique and his athleticism. That really came through afterwards. But, you know, I think that was kind of, you know, at least 12-hour days back to back and the travel on top. You know, it did really take it out of him.
To you, of course, he was just your dad. I mean, that was his job, but he was dad primarily. What was he like in that role? What was he like as a dad?
We definitely clashed. My dad and I would be quite similar characters. But at the same time, unbelievably helpful in terms of like helping you push forward and helping you to believe. Not, you know, there was no sense of fear. He never had any sense of fear. You know, he could be tough, sure. And, but, you know, he was also very proud as a dad, and he loved in particular, I feel like when he, with the grandkids, with my girls, he was really soft with them. I wonder if that was just a generation, and he cracked like a shell for the girls. But you know, and they would love him, this, you know, kind of, you know, slightly mad, mischievous, energetic little guy popping around shouting expletives. He was always full of joy. And, you know, he made our whole lives were magic in terms of like the, you know, people coming in and out, everyone welcome at the table. It was an open house. And, you know, as I said, like no fear, reach for the stars, definitely instilled that kind of belief in us.
Of those who came through, because obviously you mentioned Johnny Herbert doing your hair, there would have been a lot of significant engineers, team managers, celebs, drivers. Who stood out in your recollection? Who was your favourite when they arrived at the dinner table?
Well, we were lucky enough to meet Senna a few times. He was obviously a very, very special character. Jean Alesi, again, was a part of our early years for sure. And then you've got names like Andy Stevenson, who I sat next to the other day at the BRDC lunch in Monaco, who is still at still at Aston Martin. So what was originally the Jordan team? So that's like 37 years later. A lot of these characters have been, you know, shaped our youth and our lives. But and some big characters. I mean, you know, you had some of the Eddie Irvines in there who, he actually, his wife was called Marie, like my mum, and then they had their first kid called Zoe. So they kind of had this same little family as us. But I mean, it's a wild world out there, especially in the era that my dad came through, when actually independents were, part of the grid. Now that doesn't exist.
And I'm trying to remember, I have a vague recollection. Didn't your dad get Eddie Irvine into F1 because his existing driver had gotten a fight somewhere?
Yeah, he was definitely a hustler. He was definitely always looking for a good deal, but he was really good at spotting talent. And, you know, the Michael Schumachers, you know, they all came through dad, and that was one of his real talents, was spotting talent and trusting them to kind of deliver for him. And not just at the drivers, but he instilled loyalty with his team by, you know, he wasn't a micromanager. He was very much just, you know, a conductor and a fun, you know, someone who brought the fun alongside, you know, and that in that way he could, you know, he could get his mechanics to work all-nighters and work hard for him, because they were part of a team and part of a family, and all work together.
I get the sense, though, that as a child of that kind of father, the competitiveness, the expectations of success, the challenge, that can be tough.
100%. Yeah, it's you know, there are high expectations there, for sure. I mean, I think I left investment banking to start a career in fashion. My dad didn't talk to me. He was like, "What are you doing? You know, this is a great, great career for you." Didn't talk to me for like 6 to 9 months. Wow. You know, until I reminded him, it's exactly what he did. He left banking to go, you know, he left banking to go and start karting. I mean, I think, you know, so he had to concede the point. He was tough, but he literally
didn't speak to you for 6 months.
We've had a few of those, but no, he was not happy. I think he just saw this kind of great safe path. You know, Dad didn't have a degree or, you know, have that kind of education, so for him it probably seemed like a great opportunity. But I think, you know, unfortunately he instilled in us very much more, you know, an entrepreneurial spirit to build something ourselves. You know, probably without knowing it, we picked up a lot of these, you know, punchy principles that he had put into action. We picked up over the years. So, you know, and I think at the end of the day, you know, the world of fashion, the world of racing, you know, the engineers, the sponsors, that clubby feel, tough industries, there was a lot of similarities there. So once he got past it, he could really relate to some of the same issues and troubles and, you know, need to be resilient.
But as you say, I mean, he left at the time was the definitive permanent pensionable safe job to pursue what at the time was the stupidest possible career you could go for.
Exactly. Exactly that. But he went on gut and instinct. And I think that's it. You know, we grew up with that. So, you know, the road less traveled, you know, you just got to follow your dream, follow your instinct. The gut, and he was all about that, and that's why, you know, the foundation I think is such a great follow-on of his spirit, because it's all about, you know, trying to help talented, hardworking people get the leg up. I mean, he did all the work, he grafted and grafted, but one of his favorite things to do, one of his gifts, was to help and support and coach people to really hold their vision and, you know, make a change, make a difference in the world.
And how will the foundation operate? What's it going to do?
So we want basically the foundation to work as Dad did, really, which was about connecting people. We have a book that we're launching in, should be out in autumn, and that we hope is going to be a great seller for Christmas. And this is about 25 of Dad's principles, you know, real life, practical steps for kind of getting ahead, that, you know, all things that he used in his life. So the foundation is going to be, we kind of an open call to his network and to your network for people that would like to give time through mentoring or internships. And then obviously anyone can apply. So it's all about kind of bridging the gap and helping give people a leg up. And that was something that Dad did with sailing, with broadcasters, with drivers, you know, bridging the gap between people that want to go out and, you know, dream big and you know, move forward, and, you know, using our network to find the right people to help do that.
And is the way, if people want to follow up, website, is that the place to go?
Yeah, it's www.ej.foundation.
EJ.foundation. We talked a lot about the experience of growing up with him. How have you found the experience of being without him?
Yeah, it's been up and down. It's challenging. It's such a big character. But no, I think we're just so lucky. I feel so lucky to have had him in our lives for so long. And, you know, he lived how many lives? You know, most people just get to live one, and he lived, you know, maybe 10. And I think, you know, his spirit still feels very much alive. And that's why we're, you know, committed to trying to carry on that spirit and that spark, and try and carry on some of the, maybe the lesser known passions of his, which were kind of helping talented people get ahead, opening up his, you know, network and his world to people, bringing them in, you know. And that's why we want the foundation to be, you know, not just a foundation, but more like a community, in the way that, in the way that he operated and built businesses and built, you know, that's how he lived his life, you know, with a full community.
Do you mind me asking how he and you and the family, did anything change in the knowledge that he was going to die? Because he had a diagnosis that gave time for people to settle differences, to have discussions, to say goodbyes. It wasn't a sudden thing. Was that valuable?
I think it was quite quick in the end. I think we weren't really expecting him to pass so quickly. I think, to be honest, my sense of it is that he wouldn't have wanted to hang around. He was struggling at the end to not be able to live at full pace, live at full throttle. So I think, you know, I think ultimately I feel happy for him that he was able to pass quite quickly in the end, because I don't think he would have. I don't think he would have been enjoying himself the last year so much. It would have been very frustrating for him.
Zoe, thank you very much. That is Zoe Jordan there, Eddie Jordan's daughter. And again, if you want to go to the website, it is ej.foundation, where you can find any of the information on the foundation named after Eddie Jordan.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.